The Florida Week edition of the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast is on your radio here on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome to Florida Week, and welcome, maybe more importantly, to basketball season. I'm your host, Will Bowling. Thankful you have decided to join us here, wherever you may be listening. We appreciate you doing so here on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network. Getting you set for kickoff between Tennessee and Florida here on a Saturday afternoon. And we've got a big show planned for you surrounding the Vols and the Gators and also surrounding Tennessee basketball. Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel and Grant Ramey of GoVols247.com. They are going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk some Tennessee football. But those two gentlemen also cover Tennessee basketball as well as anybody in that market. So we're going to talk some Vols hoops as well today. If you're checked out of Tennessee football, first of all, I can't blame you for feeling that way at this point, as long as Jarrett Garantano has stayed the quarterback. So we're going to relieve you with a little bit of Tennessee basketball discussion as well today. That team, at the moment, scheduled to take the court for the first time a week from today that we record this, on Wednesday the 9th, against UT Martin. As always, this show brought to you by our friends at Brentwood Hearing Center, your sound solution. They've been doing it for a long time, for over 35 years in Middle Tennessee, and they've got five doctors of audiology on its convenient location just off of I-65 at the Brentwood Old Hickory exit. If you suspect you might be missing sounds of friends, family members, or work associates, visit their website at brentwoodhearingcenter.com and schedule your appointment as soon as possible at 615-377-0420. They've got the latest in hearing device technology, and they're ready to assess your hearing needs as well. BrentwoodHearingCenter.com, the website, and the number again, 615-377-0420. Brentwood Hearing Center, better hearing, better life. Okay, so let's dive into Tennessee, Florida, and the million-dollar question of who takes the first snap for the Vols at the quarterback position. When Jeremy Pruitt talked to the media on Wednesday afternoon, he still refused to specify which of his quarterbacks missed practice last week because of COVID protocols. He said Monday that one of his quarterbacks tested positive last week, would not have been available if Tennessee's game against Vanderbilt had not been postponed. We already know that Harrison Bailey, it's been well documented, missed a lot of practice due to COVID-19 over the summer. So that's good news, I guess, if you're a Tennessee fan, because it means that Harrison Bailey is continuing to practice, is continuing to get more reps and develop chemistry with the first team wide receivers, as Jeremy Pruitt said in his press conference as well on Wednesday afternoon. I don't think you have a choice at this point. We talked about it last week on this show for our Thanksgiving special last week here on 104.5 The Zone, that at this point, you cannot keep putting Jarrett Garantano on the field and expecting different results out of the same quarterback. Jeremy Pruitt can do himself a lot of goodwill with this fan base by starting Harrison Bailey against the University of Florida. Now, does he ultimately answer to the fan base? No, he answers to the athletic director, Philip Fulmer, first and foremost. He should also answer to his team and, quite frankly, prove that your performance on the field is the biggest indicator of whether or not you are going to continue playing on that field for his football team. And then at that point as well, you have to keep the paying customers happy at some point and appease the fan base with making a move. But let's also get this straight as well, that if Harrison Bailey comes out and doesn't look great, that also doesn't really hurt Jeremy Pruitt all that much. Because at this point, you can then turn and say, well, hey, this is why I've waited as long as I have to throw the freshman into the football game. And then with a full year of spring practice next year, you have an open competition with him and Caden Salter, the highly touted freshman out of Texas, to see who the starting quarterback is. But at this point, it is in Jeremy Pruitt's best interest to make a change and start to gain some semblance of momentum heading into the offseason, and hopefully just keep things close, I guess, against a very good Florida team and a very good Florida offense. Now, Jeremy Pruitt did say on Wednesday that Harrison Bailey will, quote, definitely play against Florida. To me, that's as concrete of a statement towards him starting as you're possibly going to get. Obviously, it's not in your best interest to give who your starter is going to be if you don't have to on Wednesday of a rivalry game against Florida. But to me, that says that he's going to start. Bailey this year, all four of his possessions last month moved Tennessee down the field, led the Vols to a touchdown drive late against Auburn. And Pruitt said on Monday that playing a little bit at the end of the Kentucky game, the Arkansas game, and then a couple of weeks of practice, then getting in there against Auburn has been good for Harrison Bailey, quote, just for the speed of the game to prepare him for the future. Now, granted, he's throwing a lot of checkdowns in those games. We haven't really seen him unleash it at all. But I imagine you put Harrison Bailey with plenty of time to get ready for Florida. You put him in a situation where the offense is as simple as you can make it. You run the football. You feed Eric Gray. It's a lot of short, easy, confidence throws. And then a couple of times you look at him and say, all right, kid, let's see what you've got. You put in the more athletic, the quicker, probably more talented long-term receivers in the football game as well. And I'm not convinced that Harrison Bailey can't form some kind of chemistry and get some kind of success with guys like a Jimmy Callaway or Jimmy Holiday and Malachi Wideman on the field with their freshman counterpart, Jalin Hyatt. So I would expect to see Harrison Bailey early and often. And I would expect him to have a pretty long leash. I think this might be the first game in a while where Tennessee only plays one quarterback. And I think there's a good chance that one quarterback is Harrison Bailey, just considering everything else that's gone on with the other three guys in that quarterback room. Certainly going to be an interesting game against Florida, a team that, if you haven't watched them a lot this season, has completely taken the personality of one of the better offensive head coaches in the SEC. Dan Mullen has proven again that he is as good of a quarterback developer at the head coach role as there is in college football. I mean, Kyle Trask this season is putting up video game numbers, and you have to remember, this is a guy that didn't start for his high school team at Manville High School. I mean, this dude was as under the radar, I guess, as you can get. Still a good quarterback coming out of high school, obviously, but this is a guy who has been the equivalent of a career backup in the NFL who takes his opportunity and runs with it. I mean, this season, you look at his stats, 34 touchdowns compared to 3 interceptions. This guy is the anti-Jarrett Garantano. I mean, just over 2,800 yards, a QBR of 93.4. He is as good of a quarterback as there is in college football, even though I think that Kyle Pitts might be more deserving of the Heisman Trophy than he is. Kyle Pitts is a man against boys. I mean, what they have with him at the tight end position, I think, is a guy. 29 catches for 513 this year and 11 touchdowns, and he hasn't even played the whole season. This is a guy who I think is as surefire of an NFL prospect as I have seen at the wide receiver or tight end position in quite some time. And although it will be against Tennessee, that's a really fun guy to watch play the game of football with what he and Dan Mullen and Kyle Trask have built there on the offensive end of the ball at Florida. All right, so when we come back, we will get to our conversation with Grant Ramey and Mike Wilson. We'll ask them the question of who takes the first snap, who plays the majority of snaps on Saturday, and some hoops talk coming up next here on 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back into the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast here on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network. Doing a little bit of time traveling as we record this on a Wednesday afternoon. If you are also listening to us on 104.5 The Zone, Tennessee, Florida coming up next here in just a couple of hours here on The Zone. Full Vol Network coverage kicking off here very soon. So we've got to talk a little bit of football, also going to talk a little bit of Tennessee basketball. And joining me to do that this afternoon, Grant Ramey of GoVols 247, Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel. Gentlemen, it is good to see your faces again. Mike, I'm glad that you have chosen to wear a shirt this time. And we've come a long way since we were discussing Tennessee football at the beginning of an Atlanta Braves playoff run the last time we did this. So good to see you both again.
I have less hair and grayer hair on my face than I did then.
We've come a long way, and Will has went a long way down the list of possible guests for a podcast.
Hey, I'm just I wanted to first congratulate both of you on reaching the point where you don't have to hear the words Jarrett and Garantano said back-to-back as much in the next couple of months as you did in the last few months. So I just want to congratulate both of you as members of the Tennessee basketball media on making it, we hope, to the beginning of Tennessee basketball season.
It's time to branch off into our own little world, just hoping that that little world actually functions and basketball gets played. Cross your fingers.
It feels happy, too. I enjoy – I mean, I will say football has encroached on my basketball happiness this year, and then basketball delayed the happiness, too, because technically at the time of recording this, Grant and I should have been dining in Indianapolis before Tennessee-Gonzaga basketball. So
that's right.
I mean, there might be some crying during this podcast, and that probably will be the reason why.
There's an off day planned in Chicago for Thursday, and then their Notre Dame game is supposed to be Friday night in South Bend. Would have been a great trip to start the season, but
that's a shame.
Here we are in misery, so it's great.
Had y'all already, not to be confused with Missouri, which is a neighboring state, had y'all already plotted out your food destinations? Like, was there a donut place that had already been agreed upon for these excursions?
Listen, donuts happen. it's by nature, kind of. You just okay. have to. All right. You see something and you stop. You can't map out this kind of destiny.
All right.
There is an important story to before we really dive into this of Grant's donut situation. So when we were in New York for what was that tournament called? Barclays Classic or something?
No, this was the NIT season tip-off.
The NIT season tip-off when Tennessee played Louisville and Kansas 2 years ago. Grant, on our off day, we went to John's of Bleecker Street, which is the best pizza I've ever had. Grant and I devoured an entire pizza, and I think –
no, this was pre-game Louisville, I'm pretty sure.
Was it?
Yeah, okay. This was in the hours leading up to Louisville.
Pre-game Louisville. So, anyway, we devoured an entire large pizza in, like, what, 7.5, 8 minutes between the two of us? It was embarrassing. Also impressive. So we leave this place, start heading down the block, and Grant, we reach a street corner, and Grant just turns right, just beelines, just darts, because he spotted a sign hanging out off a building halfway down the next block that was just the shape of a donut. And Grant was just, pow, gone. His radar went up, and he was in that donut store eating a donut after we demolished a pizza.
And the donuts were as big as hubcaps.
I was going to say, was it worth it? Was the trip worth the beeline?
Of course. There's any question. Is there any question? No, never.
Well, the next time you guys are in Nashville when Tennessee plays Vanderbilt, we'll stop by my favorite Nashville donut shop called Dunkin' Donuts a couple miles from my house. And then we will proceed to probably watch ourselves make as many three-pointers as Vanderbilt did that day. It's the last time I saw you guys here. So I had to get that pot shot in while I could. All right, so we have to start with the million-dollar question about Tennessee football before I let you guys off the hook to talk basketball, because I think we would all have our Tennessee media credentials. I don't know if credentials is the right word. We would not be Tennessee media members if we did not first ask the question, who gets the start for Tennessee at quarterback against Florida, and why is it Harrison Bailey? Please discuss from there.
Go, Mike.
My first answer is, does it matter? Because I'm not convinced it does.
No, it doesn't.
It's got to be Harrison Bailey. I mean, it seems like the worst kept secret in Knoxville and the greater Knoxville area this week is that it's kind of understood that Jarrett Garantano is the quarterback that's unavailable until late this week. That's the general knowledge, buzz, rumor, whatever you want to call it. And things were already trending Harrison Bailey's way, it seemed like, which is obviously what the fan base has wanted for a while. So he is certainly the best of the three backups that from what we've seen. I mean, Brian Maurer is a sterling 1 of 5 for 1 yard this season. So we just haven't seen it from him. We haven't seen JT Schrout get an opportunity. So all signs point to Harrison Bailey.
And you go back to Monday, Jeremy Pruitt said a quarterback was in quarantine, but he didn't want to say which quarterback. Okay, well, what quarterback would it be worth keeping a secret that he's in quarantine? Not Brian Maurer, not JT Schrout. Those guys haven't been factors in weeks, and Harrison Bailey's not been a factor because you only play him when you're down 14 points in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left. That's all we've seen from him. So you connect the dots. It's got to be JG, and it should be Harrison Bailey's turn, just because, I mean, if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, I want to throw myself a lifeline and throw this guy out there. And, you know, everybody wants to see him at this point. Put him out there in the first quarter when the score's tied, when the game is still there to be had, not in the fourth quarter when you're down 14 with 5 minutes left and you can't really do much. And if Tennessee's going to be in this game and hang around, they need to run the football really well, control the ball, keep Florida's offense off the field as long as possible. And that benefits a young guy like Harrison Bailey to hand it off as many times as possible, commit to the run, and try to establish it.
They're also – Jeremy Pruitt, Grant, you touched on what he said Monday. One thing he said, too, that was a dead give of who it is in quarantine was that the guys who are out there are working to build chemistry with the receivers.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay. Well, which one would need – who would need to be building chemistry? So kind of a tell there as well. But you're right. And what's interesting is Jeremy Pruitt is putting all the eggs in the Harrison Bailey basket here. If Harrison Bailey comes out and is just a complete dud, that lifeline sinks quickly. I mean, this is a fan base with low morale already, and for the guy that they've been hanging their hat on for a while now to come out and stink it up against a bad Florida defense, oh boy, I might turn off the Twitter machine for a couple days.
No, but at the same time, if he doesn't play well, it's almost like a, see, this is why we didn't play this guy so much. This right. is why Jared Garantano has been out there so much. And at the same time, you have Caden Salter coming in as an early enrollee, and it would be, you know, if there is a spring practice, if it's somewhat normal, you're going into spring with an open quarterback battle between two young quarterbacks, which a lot of fans have turned off this team, have kind of tuned out. That would get back a lot of attention when you have two young guys that you're trying to figure out who's the future of your program, because obviously quarterback has been the position where they've been hamstrung the most.
And interestingly, those could end up being the only two guys in the quarterback room from the spring as well. If Jared Garantano's out as a sixth-year transfer, which makes sense that he would be. And I look forward to writing stories about him averaging 350 yards passing next season at Michigan State. But, yeah, I mean, there's a conceivable world in which Brian Maurer and J.T. Schrout also say, see ya, and it's Harrison.
And no one would blame him.
Right. What are the odds that Greg Schiano is coaching Jared Garantano as a Rutgers quarterback next year? Would Twitter break if that happens?
We would need a beat writer at the KNS to cover Greg Schiano and Jared Garantano.
I mean, that's within the realm of possibilities, honestly.
I felt like that was a talking point back in the spring, I guess, before Jared Garantano really kind of, I don't know, he put out some kind of tweet that he was, I don't know, it's not like a commitment, but that he was staying at Tennessee because people wondered what was next after they juggled the quarterback position so right. much and they had – other options at the position, and people thought, you know, why not Rutgers? That's a New Jersey kid. Why not go home? And I know Greg Schiano seems to be okay without him, so we'll see what happens.
Love how you get that in right at the end as well. isn't it incredible how the narrative switches so quickly from you can't blame Jeremy Pruitt for a lot of what's going on because Harrison Bailey isn't ready yet and Harrison Bailey isn't ready to be the starter yet to – oh, well, Jim Chaney didn't recruit Harrison Bailey anyway, and Caden Salter, you know, oh, yeah, that's the guy who is going to be the one that this is the guy Chaney wanted. He's going to be the one to take the reins at quarterback. At what point do we start to throw our hands up and say, this is a Jeremy Pruitt problem for having a number of four-star quarterbacks, five-star, depending on, I guess, who you ask about Harrison Bailey. You can't get any of them ready by the end of the season. I mean, to me at this point, this is not a JG issue. This is a Jeremy Pruitt issue. And I said this last week on the show to quote The Office here, which I know you all will both appreciate.
Oh, yes.
When you put an 8-year-old at the driver's seat of a car, you don't blame the 8-year-old when he gets in a wreck. You blame the adult that said, drive, kid, and you gave him the keys. You know, Jeremy Pruitt keeps giving a 12-year-old the keys to his offense. And at this point, that's a Jeremy Pruitt problem, not a Jarrett Garantano problem.
I mean, the problem is, yeah, you're the head coach. This is your program. This is year three. The biggest problem for this staff is they haven't figured out the quarterback position. They've had a veteran guy in Jared Garantano who can't consistently figure it out. Obviously, we've seen it play out for 2 years now. They have a young guy that circumstances maybe is the reason he's not ready. It's obviously been a crazy year for everybody across college football without spring football with an affected summer. But, yes, it goes back to the head coach because it's your program. You're the man in charge. It's your job to figure out your coaching staff. It's your job to figure out your roster. It's your job to figure out the most important positions on the field. And the start of that list is quarterback. And there's been times where Tennessee's played okay defensively. Tennessee's got a pretty good run game. The offensive line against Auburn a couple weeks ago started to kind of look like what people expected. But it's that colossal mistake at quarterback. I think one of the most frustrating things is JG's fine for 90% of the game. He looks like the most effective quarterback they have for most of the night. And then it's not only a mistake, it's a pick 600 yards that's a 10-point swing or a 14-point swing. That changes the game. It's all Auburn from there, and it's a blowout. But they don't have that position fixed, and you have questions about it even after this season, and that's on the head coach because it's his program.
It's shocking to me. I mean, a program like Tennessee not being able to have a single true, obvious go-to quarterback on its roster, I mean, that's kind of inexcusable. I mean, you recruit one a year and you only play one. So you should have 4 to 5 options, at least 2 of them viable every year. I mean, you think about that Georgia group a couple years back with Justin Fields and Jake Fromm at the same time. Jacob Eason was there the year before that. I mean, programs like this should have talent at the quarterback position. But it does come a point where you say, okay, why aren't these guys developed to the point that they can be options? Sure, JT Trout was Tyson Helton's guy, but why isn't he developed to the point that he's an option? And how does Tennessee just not have a guy that they can go to? Because what's crazy to me, and Grant touched on this, Jared Garantano isn't the best quarterback in the world. No one's going to argue that. But his job is to just not lose games. As long as he plays fine, throws 200 yards, a touchdown, they're going to be fine in a lot of games. But he makes these colossal, catastrophic mistakes, and that's the stuff that he can't have because he's not good enough to then turn around and overcome those mistakes. And, yeah, at some point I've wondered with Jim Chaney, it's like, okay, maybe this guy can't run your offense, but at what point is this on you guys to adjust the offense to what this team can run and what this quarterback can run? Because if he can't do it, your job as a coach is to change, and you see coaches around the country do that, and this staff hasn't done it.
When you look at Florida, who is the more deserving Heisman candidate, Kyle Trask or Kyle Pitts?
I would probably say Kyle Pitts, but when you're a quarterback and you put up the numbers that Kyle Trask does, you're going to be the one that gets that Heisman hype. Kyle Pitts, what he's done in the number of games he's done it in, I think he's played 6 of their 8. I think he has 23 catches, 500 and something yards, and 11 touchdowns. I mean, that's insane. The numbers alone are insane. But when you watch him play, the way he can run away from defensive backs, the kind of physical freak that he is, I don't think you're ever going to get enough Heisman love when you're playing a position that's not quarterback. Not that Kyle Trask doesn't deserve it. I mean, he's thrown for 38 touchdowns. He's obviously a really good quarterback. He's playing for one of the best quarterback coaches in the country in Dan Mullen. But what Kyle Pitts has done, man, I don't know when you're going to see it again, if anytime soon, because he's really, really good.
Yeah, it's Kyle Trask to me, and despite Kyle Pitts' numbers, he hasn't played in all the games, and that's kind of a factor to me where you've got to be a consistent contributor. And it's funny because before the season, Jordan Rodgers on SEC Network predicted that – I can't remember who Florida opened against, but he might have been LSU. No, I don't remember.
At Ole Miss,
that's right. And he made a prediction that Kyle Trask would throw for like 5 touchdowns, launch his Heisman campaign – with a Joe Burrow like open, and I texted Grant. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me! This is so reckless comparing a guy coming into a season to the greatest quarterback season in college football we've seen." I don't know a lot about football at this
point. Hey, go on, give yourself some credit. You were a Florida believer at the beginning of the year, as opposed to Georgia in the SEC East.
Did think Florida was going to win the division, but yeah, I thought anyone comparing Kyle Trask statistically to Joe Burrow last year was reckless, and here we are, where he's. You know, I wrote it for a story that's going up later this week that will be up by the time this podcast is, but Tennessee hasn't had a quarterback throw 6 touchdowns at Neyland, I believe. And Kyle Trask has done that twice this season. So there's a chance we can see some records coming up this week.
I'm surprised that Chicago Bears legend Tyler Bray never did that. Grant, yeah, your thoughts.
Shocked. There was that one time they beat Ole Miss 52-10.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Year one of the Derek Dooley era when they had who was that?
Justin Hunter had a huge game.
That's right. They had actually that was the year they had, you know, they could have 700 yards of total offense and they were still going into overtime against Troy because if they had 700, they were giving up 700.
That was yeah, that was for a while the trivia question of when was Tennessee's last SEC West win until Jeremy Pruitt beat Auburn on the road as well.
That's right.
It was that game against Ole Miss where they put up – they're still putting up yards, actually. I think Justin Hunter is still catching touchdown passes that day. All right, let's pivot to a little bit of basketball. So congratulations to you all and the listeners now for being able to talk about a happier topic. But I'm going to start this happier topic with a little bit of a negative question, because all I hear about Tennessee basketball right now is their veteran leadership, the experience, how good they are and how good they're going to be. What concerns you the most about this Tennessee basketball team, and maybe what's something that we as media or fans out there are not paying enough attention to, because the hype is so big surrounding this basketball team?
Mike.
It's rebounding to me. This wasn't a particularly strong rebounding team last year. They weren't a bad rebounding team outright, but they weren't a very good one. Particularly Eve Pons, it wasn't a great rebounder last year. And, you know, there's factors that go into that of he's blocking so many shots that when you go for blocks, you take yourself out of position for rebounds. But they just weren't a very good rebounding team. You know, a guy like Olivier Kamwa was brought in to rebound, just didn't do it regularly enough to even play consistently late in the season. But that, to me, is the area that they've got to excel in to reach their ceiling. And that does – I mean, EJ Anasicki was brought in to rebound. I mean, he can score a little bit, but he's a rebounder and go get the ball. But Olivier Kamwa, Uros Plavšić, like those guys, this is a lot on them. And also Eve Pons to be a good rebounder, which I also think has an impact on his NBA stock as well. I mean, I think he shows he's a good rebounder now. I mean, that probably puts him in that late first round, early second round conversation as a cemented pick.
I let Mike go first, and then he just took my answer. I mean, rebounding is I mean, it's a compliment to this roster that they've put together that after last season, rebounding seems to be the biggest issue. And it's also an issue because with the guards that they have, with the depth they have there in the backcourt, they're going to want to run on offense. And that's going to mean getting rebounds and pushing the ball up the floor. Now, if they're a team that struggles to rebound, they're not going to be able to push it and run as much as they want to. Their offense is going to be so much better if they can run and try to score in transition as much as they want to. So that's an added emphasis. And I agree, Anasicki, that's the guy that they needed last year to kind of be the go-between Fulkerson, Pons, and the guys you're bringing off the bench, Uroš and Olivier, those guys that couldn't really stay on the floor that much. He's the body type you need, that bully kind of style in the paint. I mean, obviously, rebounding with his family, it's basically in their DNA. So if he can help fix that, if they can be a better rebounding team, I think that fills in the biggest kind of gap or the biggest question you have about what should be a really talented team.
All right, Grant, I'll let you answer this next one first so you can steal Mike's answer. Out of the freshman group, who makes the biggest impact this season out of Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer, and Corey Walker?
It's got to be Keon because his stock is rising and it feels like it never stops rising. I mean, it's been 2 years now, it feels like, on the recruiting trail that he just kind of kept climbing. He's a quiet kid. He doesn't get a ton of attention. He's a little bit under the radar nationally. But the two-way potential that he has is he can be elite defensively. He's an explosive athlete. He can do what he needs to do on the offensive end. Just the kind of the way his stock's going. He went to a USA junior mini camp, whatever, in Colorado, I guess about a year, 18 months ago. And he was the MVP of that camp. And obviously there's elite talent like Jaden Springer's at that camp. He's projected, you know, top 10 pick in next summer's NBA draft, a lottery pick, obviously. So if he lives up to that potential, he should be the guy that makes the biggest impact because that's what, you know, that's what all the arrows point to right now.
Yeah, and I'll take it a step further than Grant. The answer is Keon Johnson. So Grant did get the same answer there. We're annoyingly on the same wavelength so far. We'll have to divvy up something later.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if Keon Johnson's this team's best player by the end of the season, period. And not even freshman, just player. I mean, he is projected as a top 10 pick, but it's funny, and I think I've said this to Grant at some point, is it's going to be funny looking back at Keon Johnson's offer list Right. I think basically it was Tennessee and Ohio State were kind of the only only really relevant offers of high caliber. And I mean, it's going to be one of those ones where it's shocking he didn't have more because the buzz around the guy's big. I mean, his teammates talk about him as being as athletic as Eve Pons in a lot of ways. I mean, the shot's kind of always been the development piece with him, but defense is there. He's long. He's got the ability to do all of those things. And I think he's the starting two guard at the start of this season. I wouldn't be surprised to see that at all. Keon Johnson and Corey Walker. I don't know how much of an impact Corey Walker is going to have on this team, if not for the free year of eligibility.
Right.
I wouldn't have been surprised to see him potentially be a redshirt guy.
Wow.
For Tennessee, either him or Drew Pember maybe facing that redshirt, but I think Corey Walker being the more likely one if Tennessee didn't have that free year of eligibility for everyone.
How many times would a guy like Corey Walker, rated as high as he was, step in and start for Tennessee as a freshman in the past? I mean, there's a lot of teams, even at the beginning of Rick Barnes' time at Tennessee, where a guy like that comes in and is starting for Tennessee day one. I mean, that right there to me speaks to how much this program has improved and taken steps forward. It's just the depth that they've created. They've got a lot of good players. They're going to be spending a lot of time on that bench this season.
Every year in the recruiting cycle, it's been like, you know, Eve Pons is the highest rated guy that's ever signed with Tennessee during the Barnes era. He was ranked in like the 115 range, something like that. Then DJ Burns was the highest guy that had ever signed. He was a top 100 guy.
That's a name.
And you kind of go down the list and Corey Walker is a, you know, top 80, whatever he was. I think he finished top 90, something like that. But I mean, the waters they're treading in right now, recruiting wise, it's night and day difference, but at the same time, when they get here, what their strength is, the staff-wise, is developing these players because they took a lot of three-star guys, the guys that weren't ranked very high, and turned them into really good players and got them NBA contracts. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing. You're not only recruiting at a higher level, but once they get here, they should be developed pretty well because that's their track record.
So that leads me to really what I was going to ask next. Which guy from last year's team takes the biggest step this season? And I'll while you guys think about this, and Mike, I'll start with you on this one. I am as big of a Santiago Viscovi fan as you are going to find. Chad Withrow in the Mid-Day 180 always says that's my guy. This might just become a Viscovi fan podcast as this season goes on. I think that dude takes a giant step forward with more guys to distribute and play with this season around him that are talented, that are more athletic, that are just, quite frankly, better basketball players. But if it is not Viscovi who you guys think takes the biggest step forward this season, who does?
Let me give a three-part answer here to start.
Wow.
I don't think it's fair to pick Victor Bailey Jr. because we haven't seen him play for Tennessee.
That's fair.
I do think he's a guy that's going to be a breakout player for this team. I think the guy it needs to be is Olivier Kamwa or Uros Plavšić. One of those two has to be that guy who takes the biggest jump.
Don't you
but
say
I
it.
Think the person
don't you say it.
Is Josiah.
I'm out of here. You don't need me. I'm out of here.
Because, I mean, we saw Josiah James have some really good games last year, but he was never really fully healthy. I also don't think statistically what we will see at the end of the year will reflect how big of a jump he takes. Because on this team, there's going to be so many mouths to feed, so many guys scoring, so many guys getting rebounds, assists. It's going to be hard to judge statistically who took the biggest jump. But I think it's Josiah Jordan James. I just think he's the perfect glue guy on this team. You play the three, play the four, guard one through four. I mean, he's going to be that linchpin piece for Rick Barnes where they can really truly match up with anyone based on where they choose to play Josiah. And that's a beautiful piece to have, and I think we're going to see a different Josiah Jordan James this year.
And he's healthy. He wasn't healthy. I mean, he was healthy enough to play, obviously, because he played a lot of games last year, played a lot of minutes. But he was kind of going through stuff that dated all the way back to the preseason and missing time last October. And
didn't really have a preseason.
Right, January and February, he missed, I think, three or four games. What sticks out about him going back to, I mean, conversations with his high school coach, they basically had to tell him to score more, to try to score more because he wanted to distribute and he kind of wanted to share the ball more than he wanted to try to score himself. I think he can go back to that now a little bit. I mean, his shot has improved. He's a better scorer than he was the day he stepped on campus. But he's also got, you know, so much more talent around him that I think you can just kind of sit back and watch this guy. And maybe he doesn't score the most or doesn't have the highest average. But he will be the guy that might be the most impressive based on what he can do for other guys involved.
And an interesting thing we saw from Josiah last year was it seemed like the games he played against five-star guys like Florida, Memphis, like those were games he played really well. And I'm curious to see how now being surrounded by five-star guys, just how that changes the way that he plays the game. Because it seemed like he played the game differently when he was on the court with guys that were kind of highly touted recruits like him. I mean, the way he came out in that Memphis game was phenomenal. So I think that's kind of an interesting factor with him of the way that he plays when he's around really talented players. And Tennessee has a whole lot of those right now.
It's very weird watching Kentucky and Kansas the other night and hearing Dick Vitale, your boy, Mike, give Tennessee a shout out at the end of a Kentucky game. I mean, this is not the narrative of Tennessee basketball is getting mentions during the Champions Classic of blue blood programs. Very strange. I don't know. As many times as I've watched a Tennessee-Kentucky game or a Tennessee in any blue blood program, and the narrative is that, oh, the blue blood team is always going to get the love, is always going to get the attention and the eye of a guy like Dick Vitale. It's just it's strange to me. This whole thing is strange of Tennessee being a basketball school and not a football school, and we're watching Kentucky-Kansas in the final seconds of a close game. We're talking about Tennessee. That will never be normal to me.
And specifically because it relates so much to Kentucky, what they have done during the Rick Barnes era against Kentucky is not normal. I mean, Tennessee, I think there's a stat out there that Tennessee's beat Kentucky more than any other program in college basketball. Well, part of that's because they play so often. They played right. So much over the years. But the way the rate at which they've won, the way they've won against Kentucky during the Barnes era is crazy. Some of those first couple teams that Barnes had, they weren't very good. They beat some really good, really talented Kentucky teams. Going to Rupp and winning twice already, the way they won that SEC tournament semifinal game a couple of years ago, crazy ending in that one. Just the way they do that, it's not normal, and you hope Tennessee fans appreciate it. And the way Kentucky is struggling early this season makes you appreciate this Tennessee basketball roster a little bit more because they rely so much on elite NBA lottery pick talent. It's like they wipe this slate clean every year and start over with these guys. Whereas Tennessee's got, you know, a couple of veterans they can lean on. They got a couple of sophomores that played a ton of minutes last year. They've got some five-star talent coming into the program. The way they've blended their roster makes you feel a lot better about what they're capable of versus Kentucky, who it seems like it always takes a while for them to figure it out.
Yeah, when you've got as many veterans, too, as Tennessee does, and I said this to someone recently, it changes the floor of your team. I mean, when you have a whole bunch of newcomers every year, as talented as they are, you don't really know what you're going to get. I mean, we saw it last year with that Evansville loss. Richmond is good. I mean, the Richmond team would beat Kentucky the other day is a good basketball team. But you lose some of those games that maybe you don't expect to do so. When you return the pieces Tennessee does, it changes your floor. I mean, the worst-case scenario when you look at this Tennessee team is, okay, they're an NCAA tournament team. I mean, even in a crazy upside-down year with who knows who's going to be available when, games canceled, postponed, this and that, it changes what you're capable of doing as a team, and that's definitely one of the beautiful pieces for Tennessee going into this season, assuming it starts on December 9th here.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm hesitant to give a preview of Tennessee's first game because as fluid as things have been the past couple weeks, that can change in a hurry. But real quick on the way out, Tennessee does add the game next Wednesday against UT Martin. Do you guys see them adding more of these in-state non-conference games to try to make up for the four games they lost?
I think you try to. I think it's not going to be easy because you already have quite a few dates in December with UT Martin game added to that. It's going to have to get interesting where you play a couple games, maybe three games a week. But I think they will try to play as many as they can before they get rolling at Missouri to start SEC play at the end of the month.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, Tennessee lost four games that way really quick. But the beauty, and I think Mike Schwartz said it on Ball Calls last week, is a lot of teams looking for games right now. Because a lot of teams have had games canceled and lost opportunities. So it's going to be an interesting free-for-all at a lot of points, it seems like. And if you're Tennessee, I mean, they had 27. They dropped to 23. Now they're up to 24. But you got to get as many games in now as you can in case there's shutdowns later in the year and you lose some games there. So I imagine they're going to be heavy on the phones trying to add games in December to see what happens.
All right, gentlemen, appreciate the time today. I'm hoping the next time I text in our group texts, it's not because Marcelo Zuna has signed with a different baseball team, but who knows? You.
I'm not sure. I'm sure the Braves are about to nail down George Springer. So just, yeah. You know,
speaking of, they let Bobby Erlin walk, so they've got to be locking up someone big in the near future.
Opened up some big time salary numbers.
You signed Grant Drayton today too. I mean, he's got a good first name, but that's about all I know.
That's the first time also I've seen someone sign to a contract less than $1 million in a long time. And I follow hockey, so that's saying something.
Brought back Johan Camargo for like $1.6 million so he can buy a bunch of gum to chomp on while he strikes out.
On that note, I think we're going to end it there because it's not getting any better than that. Boys, thank you for the time as always today.
Thanks, Will.
Bye.
More coming up when we come back. This is 104.5 The Zone. The Ultimate Tennessee Podcast, rolling right along here on the 104.5 The Zone Podcast Network. Will Bowling here with you. Appreciate Mike Wilson, Grant Ramey for joining us here a minute ago on the show. If you missed that conversation here live on 104.5 The Zone, you can check it out wherever you listen to podcasts on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating, as always. 2 5-star gentlemen joining us, and let us know what you think of the show. All right, so let's do some SEC picks. Thank God we've got more than like 3 games to talk about this week, with 6 games going on across the SEC. And let's start down in Auburn, Alabama, at Jordan-Hare Stadium, where Auburn will host 5th-ranked Texas A&M. I think Texas A&M might be the least discussed number 5 team in college football history, because it seems like everyone just wants to give the top 4 to Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State. But there is a very, I wouldn't say very real possibility, maybe. There is a possibility that if Ohio State isn't eligible for the college football playoff, that Texas A&M is next man up, playing Alabama in the first round. A rematch of a game that wasn't particularly close earlier this year, but still would give the SEC a second team in the college football playoff. I don't think it's going to happen, but still, a really good football team in A&M, who's 6-1 with Jimbo Fisher, Isaiah Spiller, and Kellen Mond. I'm surprised this line is not bigger. A&M, a 7-point favorite against Auburn. I'm taking the Aggies to cover the spread there. Jordan-Hare Stadium at 11 a.m. Central does not concern me. We saw Jarrett Garantano lead a Tennessee team into Jordan-Hare Stadium for a noon game a couple of years ago and get a win. I don't think A&M will have any issues. And it's kind of a weird vibe for Auburn, too, because they've got to play another game after the Iron Bowl, an Iron Bowl that they did not look good in at all. That to me is, it's got to be a weird feeling for that team. I think that's one where you look back and say, I think Alabama helps beat Auburn twice. So I think that game isn't close on Saturday. I think A&M covers that spread with ease. Arkansas goes to Missouri. Again, another line I expected to be a lot bigger. Missouri only a field goal favorite at home against the Arkansas Razorbacks. I like Missouri in this one again. I don't think teams want to play Missouri right now. Eli Drinkwitz has really gotten a lot out of that football team in year one, like Sam Pittman has, honestly. Two of the leading guys for the SEC Coach of the Year this season. You look at those offenses, they've been a lot better than what people expected, with Felipe Franks at Arkansas, with Connor Bazalak at Missouri. But I do think Missouri at home, after looking so good against Vanderbilt last week, will win that one and cover the 3-point spread. All right, so that brings us to our game here, right here on 104.5 The Zone. Tennessee hosting the University of Florida. Florida, a 17.5-point favorite. And that is a big number for a Florida team that is playing in Neyland Stadium. It's not often that that has happened. In fact, Tennessee has only been a double-digit home underdog to Florida once in the series history. That was back in 2010, where Tennessee was a 14-point underdog. And the sad thing is, I don't think Florida has any trouble covering 17.5. That offense, when they get a lot of time with possession of the football, Tennessee has no shot of keeping up with that offense and what Kyle Trask and Kyle Pitts do for Dan Mullen's team. The only chance they have of really keeping this close and hanging in there is if they run the ball so well and keep moving the chains against an average Florida defense, they just don't put the ball in Kyle Trask's hands. I don't see them having that kind of success offensively. I think the defense is really going to have a lot of trouble covering Kyle Pitts. Look, all they have to do is run slant passes to him. One of Tennessee's kryptonites all year has been covering the tight end over the middle. It's one of their weaknesses of their linebackers with Henry To'oto'o and Jeremy Banks and Kavaris Crouch. I think Florida throws all over Tennessee and covers 17.5 by halftime on Saturday. Vanderbilt headed to Georgia, 35.5 the number for Georgia. I think the Bulldogs cover that. JT Daniels. It's got to be weird for Georgia fans because you've got to be happy that JT Daniels is as good as he has been. You also have to be a little upset at Kirby Smart for not giving him the keys to the offense sooner. And I almost wonder if we're going to be saying the same thing about Harrison Bailey in Tennessee by Sunday morning. South Carolina going to Kentucky. Those are two teams that have kind of quit. I think South Carolina's quit more. Kentucky, the line is 11.5. I have a hard time picking all favorites to cover, but I'm going to do it again. I think Kentucky covers that spread. I guess I'll finally put my foot down and pick an underdog to cover. I'll say LSU covers 29.5 against Alabama. I don't think that LSU team is as bad as they were at the start of the season. Still, certainly not the same, obviously, as last year. They've had a lot of guys opt out as well late in the year. But I can't pick all favorites, right? I've got to pick one of the underdogs to cover the spread. I guess LSU's lucky they're just the last team that I read because they're the last team that starts at 7 o'clock Central. So, congrats, LSU. I think you're going to cover the spread against Alabama. All right, that will do it for this episode of the UT Podcast. Check us out wherever you listen to podcasts, and we will get you ready for Tennessee and somebody next week here on 104.5 The Zone.